Welcome to Profit Boss Radio, where successful women have paved the road to their own financial freedom. Each week, your host, Hillary Hendershot, financial coach, money mindset expert, and experienced wealth manager, will help you discover the keys to the wealth and peace of mind you want and deserve in her no-nonsense and authentic style. Starting right now.
Profit Boss, this is your host, Hillary Hendershot, coming at you from Profit Boss Studios, deep in the heart of Silicon Valley, California. As you know, this is not an entrepreneurship podcast. It's a money podcast. And are entrepreneurship and wealth intertwined? Yes, they are. They're inextricably linked. If you're making money, you're either doing so in your business or in someone else's business. And so they can never truly be separated. But there are plenty of shows that interview entrepreneurs about how they do what they do and et cetera. This is not that. However, today's guest is an entrepreneur and she's not a money expert. Her name is Laura Roeder. She's the founder of Meet Edgar, a social automation tool. And the thing that makes Laura really special is that she has achieved pretty meteoric success, and I don't think she's older than 32. I didn't ask her age during the interview, but she's like either 30, 31, or 32. I mean, I don't think that she gives her own expansive money operating system enough credit. You know, we all know ourselves too well. We sit with ourselves on the train, the plane, the bus, and the automobile, and we're never enthralled or excited about what we bring to the table. I think if we were able to spend a couple more hours with her, we could talk about what it really took to go from being a web designer to being the owner of a company that makes, as she shares in the interview, almost $300,000 a month. Laura is a frequent speaker at conferences, and she even spoke about the value of independent entrepreneurship at the White House. She's appeared in Forbes, Fast Company, Mashable, CNET, and lots of other publications. I hope you enjoy this interview with the amazing Laura Roeder. Laura Roeder, it is awesome to have you on Profit Boss Radio. Welcome.
Thank you, Hillary. I'm very happy to be here.
Laura, Zuckerberg comparisons aside, most people don't get serious about business or their career until earliest in their 30s, right? A lot of people would like to. Some even give it a try, but most just don't make it. And you got things off the ground much earlier than that. I mean, were you like 25 when things really started to take off for you in the previous iteration of your business?
Yeah, I mean, I launched my first business when I was 22. And yeah, I had success pretty early on. I've run a few businesses over the past 10 years since.
Yeah. So what traits or skills of yours do you attribute to that success?
I mean, always being open to learning is so important, right? I'm sure a lot of people say that, but I think that's what's really fun and can also be a total nightmare about being an entrepreneur, is that there's something new to learn every day. And I think it's easy to have that feeling of like, when will this end? I think I used to have this idea like, someday I'm going to figure it out. Like, I'm going to figure out.
And I will have arrived.
Right. And I'll know how to do it. There'll be no more challenges. And now I kind of embrace that as the fun. It's like, there's always going to be something totally new to encounter. There's always going to be some sort of problem coming up that I've never had before. And to view it as like a fun challenge.
What were some of the lessons that you, because I think they're intertwined, your success in business and the lessons that you learned about money. What were some of the lessons you learned about money in your childhood?
So in my childhood, I mean, my parents were very frugal. They always taught me, you know, never have any debt, never have debt for a car, never have any credit card debt. So, and my parents are very responsible with money and taught me to do the same. So maybe that's why I'm such an adamant bootstrapper. You know, I've never raised money for a business. I love just having it be bootstrapped, self-funded. I definitely, as most, I think most entrepreneurs do, you know, who don't grow up wealthy, I did have to kind of teach myself like, okay, it's okay to spend money on a business. It's okay to make a lot of money on a business, because I did surpass what, you know, my parents made while I was in my 20s, which can be a very weird thing to happen.
Yeah.
And it's something that I thought a lot about and was conscious of feeling weird about, because I didn't want to limit my income in that way.
So, and that dovetails perfectly or segues into the next question, because one of the things I really like to talk about is the significance of your money beliefs, because we human beings made money up. It's totally conceptual. So we have all these superstitions. I mean, one person can believe there's never enough money. Another person can believe there's always enough money. And those beliefs come true in our lives, right? So what is it that you believe to be true about money that you see manifested in your life?
You know, when I first started making more money, I definitely felt fearful that it was just sort of a temporary luck thing. And I would say that's been kind of my bugaboo about money. That's kind of like my bad belief that comes up, is that I'm going to have too much. Yeah. I'm going to like have hubris, right? And I'm going to think, oh, the good times are going to continue forever. Yeah. And I'm going to blow it, right? And I'm going to look back and think like, oh, why did I do that when I was in my 30s? You know, I could have like built wealth for life. But it's actually a really silly idea, because, you know, I am very responsible with my money and retirement savings and a lot of savings and stuff. So I was aware of this when I first started, you know, making six figures. So I decided to make a rule for myself that if I had the money and I wanted something, I would buy it, which, I mean, sounds kind of simple and kind of funny, but I was really struggling with that at the time. And by had the money, by the way, I mean, had it kind of left over in my checking account, because I was, you know, paying myself salary, putting away my savings, putting away my retirement, but then I had money left over. And then I would think like, oh, I really want that top. That's $100, you know, can I get it? And so I was like, okay, well, my rule is going to be, if I have $100 in my checking account, then I can afford the top. And it was really hard for me to be able to do that. And it's still something that I struggle with, you know, now that I have a pretty good amount of wealth. I want like an expensive sofa or something. I'm like, oh, but that sofa costs so much money, but I have the money. And of course, we all have to be conscious around, you don't want to buy expensive things just for the sake of it, right? You want to make sure you're getting value and that you're going to enjoy it. So that's a belief that I do try to reinforce with myself, is like, I am good with my money. I am responsible with my money. So if there's something that I want to buy, I'm not putting myself in debt, right? The money's there. I have it. So I should go ahead and buy it. So that's like one of those that has helped me and that I'm continually working on.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And you must have had some really, to contrast with that, like that fear, you must have had some really expansive money beliefs, because you've let the numbers get pretty big. Do you know where that came from, or what transformations did you have to create in yourself along the way?
I mean, one thing is realizing, like, I definitely made a shift from, I guess I would phrase it, a shift from like Laura making money to like Laura running a business.
Right.
And a business has a much larger capacity to make money than I do. You know, there's only so much money I can make. One, obviously, like trading hours for dollars. Like when I started out, I was doing design, and that was like a very straightforward, I work and then you pay me this much money. But then even my business after that, which was like social media training business, where I was kind of the main character and the trainer, it was still pretty limited by, I was always the one driving it. Like I would have a small team, but like I was the one making sure the income came in. I was the one driving everything in the business. And then when I have made that shift now to like, I own a business, you know, but I'm not the one making the money come in, right? The money comes in from customers referring each other. The money comes in from the activities in the marketing department. That opens up hugely the amount of money that the business can generate, and then the amount of money that it provides for me in salary and in profits.
Right. And I was going to ask you about that, because I watched you make that transformation and I thought, she's smart. I thought she knows what she's doing, because now you're creating something that's sellable, it's scalable, right? And sets you up to be a serial entrepreneur. But if we rewind just a little bit back to the earlier iteration of the business that you built, would you share one thing that you did financially really well in those first couple of years of being in business? And then would you share a money mistake that you made?
Yeah, so I'm trying to think the first couple years in general. Well, I'll share one like money story that I always remember that is sort of a mistake and something I did well by the end. So when I first started out as a designer, that was in 2007. So at that time, not everyone had a smartphone, but I was communicating with my clients primarily via email. You know, I'd send them an email on the design and they would write back changes. But I also was spending all my time running around town doing meetings and proposals and stuff like that. So I would have this problem where I would be like gone for a few hours, they would send something, I would totally miss it, I'd be all behind. So I was like, man, if I had, at the time it was like a BlackBerry. I was like, if I had a BlackBerry, I could look at my, it sounds funny now, like I could look at my email wherever I am.
Imagine
and then
that.
I wouldn't, right, and I wouldn't miss these important messages from clients. And you could get a used BlackBerry at the time for, I think it was like $100. Like if you buy like a used one on eBay. And I probably ran my business for a year before I bought that BlackBerry. And like that was totally ridiculous because it was a huge upgrade in my productivity to be able to not worry about going to a meeting that I was going to miss some important, you know, urgent message from a client. So
all to avoid spending $100.
Yeah. You know, like I was definitely too tight with my money and was not looking realistically at the value that it could provide. Because also at the time it was sort of like a fancy thing to have a BlackBerry. And I definitely got tied up in like not being able to just take an objective look at like, will the BlackBerry get me a good ROI? I think my mind was kind of tied up in like, I'm not one of those fancy ladies who has a BlackBerry, you know, like I'm a 22-year-old trying to run a business. Like that's not for me. And, you know, talking about money beliefs, I think that's kind of the big thing that comes up over and over again is you'll not choose something for yourself because you think, oh, I'm not that type of person or like that's not for me. You know, I'm not a real entrepreneur. I'm just like a little freelancer or whatever we believe. So yeah, it was a mistake that it took me way too long. And then it was a good money decision once I finally went for it and bought that stupid used BlackBerry off eBay. I can literally remember getting it in the mail. I was like so excited to get this thing. And yeah, it's something that I think about now. And actually, I mean, it's funny how these lessons repeat themselves. I just talked to my team about this at Meet Edgar because like we had someone on the team that basically like wasted a lot of time trying to figure out how he could do something himself, kind of MacGyver it when you can just buy a tool that just does it for you. And at our management meeting, we're like, we really need to spread this message throughout the organization. Like know your own hourly rate. If you're spending 10 hours and we can spend $50 on a tool, just buy the tool. So it's like something that at every level I have to keep reinforcing, like spend the money if it's worth it.
Sure, of course. I miss BlackBerries. I could type faster on the BlackBerry than after years of having an iPhone, I still miss that keyboard.
I do too.
So you transitioned what was a personality brand into a scalable SaaS or software as a service business, which again, I think is pretty smart. You can go on vacation. And you started to describe your thought process in making that change. Did you always know that's what was ahead of you as an entrepreneur? Was it, you know, conscious kind of elevating yourself to the next level?
It was something I was always interested in. I was very interested in the business model of doing software, you know, the SaaS business model in particular. I had learned about it and I knew that it was a great model, which is also how I moved from doing like freelance work to information products and training. I learned about the business model of information products and I was like, oh, whoa, it's a much smarter business model than providing a service. And it was similar. Like I learned about SaaS. I'm like, oh, this is a smart business model. So I had been interested in it for a while, but I hadn't had just that good enough idea, honestly, for software. Like you can't just sell any software. It has to be great software that people will actually pay for. So it had been on my radar for a while. And then when the idea for Meet Edgar emerged from training that I was doing, I was able to kind of jump on it and say, okay, now's the time to move to software.
Okay. Can you say more about that moment? Do you remember the moment that you made the decision to let the coaching business go?
Well, so that happened. So basically like in 2014, we launched Meet Edgar June, July, 2014. And I was running my information product business, LKR Social Media. When we launched Edgar, I thought we were going to do both. I thought we were going to be like a training company and then we'd have software and they would kind of support each other. You know, we would teach people and then we'd say, we'll buy the software and it'll do it for you. Once Edgar launched, it got traction very, very quickly. You know, we had our first 500 customers within like maybe 2 or 3 months of launch, and it was growing very quickly. So basically, it just took off so well. And I didn't really want to do the training business at that time. I was kind of tired of it.
Right.
And I like, it was kind of honestly a fantasy, like maybe I could just do the software business. It was kind of a fantasy that I didn't really think was going to happen. I'm like, well, I mean, that would be amazing. That would be really cool. But I doubt the software is going to do that well, is kind of what I thought. So once it did do that well, it was like, oh, wow, okay, like maybe we can just do software. So it wasn't like a like line in the sand, black and white. So we launched in 2014. In 2015, we still did a launch of our program, Creating Fame. We did an affiliate promotion for B School, which I co-founded with Marie Forleo. So we were still in the information product world. And then 2016, this year, has been the first year that we've just ceased all those activities.
Right.
So yeah, it wasn't like a, just we're shutting down one and launching the other. It's something that was a transition that happened more gradually.
Was the coaching, you already said you kind of were tired of doing it, but getting a little down in the weeds, you had a lot of link juice at laurarodner.com and you're really not using that site to make money anymore. Was that hard to give up?
Like it's just been something that we're trying to figure out. I mean, yeah. So LKR social media is still just sitting there. We've moved some of the blog over. Like it's something that's on the list. It's just not, it's not really a priority. I mean, I didn't feel like I was giving it up because obviously we were able to leverage that whole audience and launching Edgar. You know, it's not like we started from scratch. I had been building a list for the past 5 years of people interested in social media marketing when we launched Edgar, which is a social media software.
Right.
So it's not like I felt like, oh, I should still be leveraging the old business. You know, we obviously use those audiences.
Because you did by using the list.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, so I might be making assumptions. Okay, so please forgive me if I just don't know your technical background, but would it be fair to say that you are not a coder? I mean, you started as a social media and web designer, right?
Right, right. So yeah, I used to code websites, but that's very different from coding software. So yes, that's correct. I do not know how to code software.
Okay, so then Meet Edgar is a product you yourself don't technically know how to make.
Correct.
Okay. Good. Good. Glad I didn't offend you. So I know you've already made the leap. And once we've achieved growth in life, it can be really hard to look back on our past selves and remember not knowing. But didn't you face internal resistance about the idea of creating a software product that isn't your skill set?
Well, yes and no, because I thought, well, this is also the greatest because I know I won't be tied to this because I don't know what to do if it breaks.
I don't have to teach it.
You know what I mean? Because like with the info products, I was still making them myself. Like I had a little team of people to help me, but I was the one who went in when anything went wrong or if anything needed to be redone or whatever. So I thought like, man, wouldn't it be cool to have a business where if the software is down, I'm like, well, good luck because I don't know what to do. Like, I don't know the first thing. So yeah, it's intimidating, but I was kind of excited by having that baked into the model.
Yeah. So then is the answer about how to solve that problem as easy and obvious as get a great engineering team? I mean, what lessons did you learn there?
Yeah. So I had a huge way to make this easier, which is my husband is a software developer.
Oh.
And he built the initial version of Meet Edgar.
That's not going to help anyone, Laura.
No, I know. I know. I kind of hate telling that story because people are like, well, good for you. It sucks for me. But there is something to learn. There really is. And what's to learn from that is that you need your technical, you know, co-founder, whoever they are, they need to be a core part of the team. That's like the biggest thing that I would tell people. I have literally never seen it work to just say, I have a software idea. I'm going to hire a team or especially hire an offshore team, like go build the software. Because if your business is going to be software, that's your core capability. It's like saying like, I'm going to have a public speaking career. And then you're like, oh, whatever. I'll just like find someone in the Philippines to do the speaking, you know,
or write the speeches.
Right. Like it's not going to work. That's your core capability. That needs to be your core team. So you definitely need to partner up with a developer who is like either someone who is like a co-founder, co-owner of the business, someone you pay a high salary, if you have the money there. That would be my biggest advice. And my advice along with that too, is that if you know marketing, which I know a lot of people listening are on that side where they know marketing and they know how to run a business, your skills are very much just as valuable. I'm going to say if not more valuable than your development partner, because you need the partner to build the software. But any developer that you meet will tell you stories of software they have built that has never gone anywhere because they didn't know how to sell it. A lot of developers literally think that you don't even have to sell it. They believe, you know, if you build it, they will come, and it doesn't ever work out. So you absolutely need two sides. You need the person to build the product and you need the person to sell the product. So if you have those skills, you know, online marketing, you know, sales, you know, how to operate a business, I promise you there are lots of technical people out there actively looking for you.
Awesome. So I want to go back and talk about an article that you published on your own blog a while ago. It's called How Being Nice is Killing Your Shot at Success and How I Changed My Nice Girl Ways. Do you remember that article?
Yeah.
Okay. You said something that surprised me. You said that you don't care about loyalty, that it doesn't matter whether someone's been working with you 5 days or 5 years, that you're willing to walk away. Is that still your philosophy?
It is. So at my company, we call it value for value. So this is like one of our core beliefs, value for value. And value for value means that everything needs to be an even exchange of value. So our customers pay us $50, they get software that's worth $50. You know, we pay someone on our team $60,000, we get hopefully that and more, you know, $60,000 worth of value for them. Mm-hmm. And so for me, the idea of loyalty is like, I wouldn't want it either. Like, I don't want anyone at the company to stay out of loyalty who's not interested in being there. I would never want them to feel like, you know, I'm not really so interested in this company or in this role anymore, but like they'd have a really hard time without me. I've been here for 5 years. It would be disloyal to leave. I want to make sure that everyone wants to be there every day. I mean, people are going to have some bad days, right? Maybe they're less excited some days than others. But on an ongoing basis, like loyalty to me kind of means like this used to be working out, but maybe it's not working out anymore. But because of loyalty, I'm going to go by what was happening a year ago instead of what's happening today.
So I respect that. And I think there's this unarticulated promise between most women, including in our roles as entrepreneurs, to be nice to one another and to honor our feelings and not hurt each other's feelings and not question or confront other women. Do you experience that culture?
Yes, because I know what you're referring to. I think I'm probably a lot harsher than most people, especially in my business stuff. Like to me, there's this very clear line with my business where like, I will always help a friend out, but my business is not going to help a friend out unless it makes sense for the business.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So like if someone has something they want me to tweet, like I have my own Twitter account, I'll always tweet out stuff for my friends. Great, whatever. But I'm not going to like put a message in my business newsletter about it if it doesn't make sense for the business, because like there's a specific purpose for that newsletter. It's to sell Meet Edgar. Like that's why we send out the newsletter. It's not like to do favors for my friends, where my personal social media channels, whatever. It's something I do, you know, let's say for fun, more or less. So I'll send that stuff out. And not everyone operates that way. Some people are going to be offended if you don't, you know, mention their new product in your newsletter or whatever, and they'll feel like you're my friend. You should have done that for me. So I probably am not a good match for being friends with people who feel that way, honestly.
Do you find, right, so you've created this kind of artificial boundary. So you'll tweet on your personal, and we're just using Twitter as a example. You'll tweet on your personal, but not on the business. But I don't think you were doing non-businessy stuff even, you know, 4, 6, 8 years ago because you were doing business under Laura Roeder.
Yeah.
Do you find that you work less and less with women as a result of giving up your nice girl ways, or how have you navigated that? Is it just that different women come into your space?
Yeah, because I think, you know, maybe you could say that's a trait that's more common for women, but it's certainly not a trait that all women have.
No.
So, and it's
actually one I'm trying to talk my audience out of. So,
well, like here's a good example of that. So Noah Kagan, his company, who's obviously a man, not a woman, his company is Sumo Me and AppSumo. And on AppSumo, they run regular deals for like software like mine, software like Meet Edgar. So it would make a lot of sense for us to do a deal together. But like we haven't been able to find a way that we both, that it's like mutually beneficial in our specific scenario. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people wouldn't understand that. A lot of people would be like, well, Noah should do it as a favor for you, or you should do it as a favor for Noah. Like you guys are good friends. Why wouldn't you put your software on his thing? But we just don't see it that way at all. We see it like, yeah, those are our businesses. If our businesses can work together and it'll be beneficial, fantastic. But we're not going to try to force something just because we're friends.
Got it. So then in April of this year, Entrepreneur Magazine reported that your Meet Edgar app was up to $150,000 in monthly revenue. So that kind of growth in the company also represents growth in you. And we talked about this a little bit earlier, but most entrepreneurs unknowingly cap their success. Mm-hmm. So $150,000 in monthly revenue is a lot different than the business you were in just a few mm-hmm. years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. So what were the pivot points that you experienced, or put another way, what were the points along the way where the old you would have put the brakes on and you saw it happening and interrupted it?
Well, yeah, I mean, to update that, now we're close to double that amount now.
Okay. So, congratulations.
Yeah, we've grown quite a bit. I mean, this is something that I was just thinking about yesterday. I think it's this ongoing process of, one, serving the business and not necessarily yourself. And obviously you're creating a role for yourself that you enjoy in the business, but it's very easy to limit the business by what you've done before. So I'll tell you exactly what came up for me this week. We've never had a free plan at Edgar. And it's something that I've been very adamant about we don't have one. We're never going to have one. It's a bad idea. It just that's always been my thinking around business.
Uh-huh.
And I was talking to a founder of another SaaS this week, and he was telling me like about their free plan and how valuable it's been for his business. And he's like, you should really think about doing it. And I don't know whether or not we'll do it, but I found myself being able to listen to him in a much more open-minded way than I have in the past. Like before, when someone would talk about a free plan, I would just kind of be like, well, that's a bad idea. You know, like immediately I had this thing in my head, which I wasn't viewing as a limiting belief. I was just viewing as like, oh, well, that's not it. Like, I know that's not right. Or I know that's not a match for us. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting being able to observe myself being like, wait, maybe I've shot that down too quickly, because I've never really thought it through. I've never really considered it before now. I just immediately shot it down. So like, I don't know the trick to that besides kind of being aware of your own thoughts. I mean, it usually takes time. I mean, I was just on a call before this with our head of operations, and I was telling her about how earlier this year we thought like there was no way we need a full-time designer. We just needed a part-time designer. And I'm like, what was I thinking? Like, our company's growing so much. Like, obviously we're going to need a full-time designer in a few months, if not now. And that was a limiting belief that I couldn't see at the time that I can see now. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think it's just constantly questioning yourself and saying like, why? Well, why do I think that we will not have room for a full-time designer in a year? And then if you start to really break it down, you realize it's just kind of this like knee-jerk reaction of like, we don't need that. That's not going to work for us. We don't want to do that. It's like, why?
Did you ever struggle with feelings of being worthy? Like, so many women have a hard time just pricing their services, and yet here you are at $300,000 a month. Did that ever come up for you?
I mean, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I try to just think of it like I'm not pricing me. Like, I hate that phrase, like, charge what you're worth.
I know, me too.
Because you're not a slave. You're
worth the same as everybody else. You don't have right. more or less worth than anyone else. It's what you're selling that has worth.
Exactly. Exactly. So, you know, and it does, like I was talking earlier about the mindset shift between like me making money and the business making money, you know, and that's very much tied up in this, because it's easy to feel weird if you feel like they're just putting money in your pocket, you know, whereas even if the business is just you, if you're able to see that divide and say like, well, they're paying for a website to be made. How much should it cost for a website to be made? Not like they're paying for me to like pay my student loans, you know, because a lot of people think of it that way. And then it gets all weird. Like, well, why should they pay for my student loans? Like, they're not paying for your student loans. They're paying for the website. You're turning around and putting that in your student loans, but that's an unrelated issue.
So what's your strategy to turn your business success into personal financial success? I mean, in order for the money to be yours, it has to get into your personal accounts. You talked about saving for retirement, et cetera, et cetera. But how are you managing that in your own life? Is it basically max out the retirement accounts and save, you know, what's left over otherwise than that?
So, I mean, first of all, I'm a big believer in pay yourself a good salary as soon as possible. That has to be a really strong priority. And that's another financial mistake I made early in my business. I paid myself as little as possible. I thought like, well, I'm just going to pay myself the bare minimum to get by. Of course, what happens is like, that's not enough. And then you keep taking like more and more out of the business. You know, I'm like, I'm going to pay myself. Because at the time it was probably like, I don't know, like $2,000 a month when I first started. So like, I'm going to pay myself $2,000 a month. But then I'm like, well, it turns out that wasn't enough that month. Okay, I'm going to transfer 200 here, 200 there, 100 more, like as the month goes on.
Yes.
And you end up with a super messy financial situation. And you're like, where'd all my money go? Well, it all went back to me, to Trader Joe's and my student loans without realizing it, you know? And there's no separation between the business's money and your money. So I'm a huge believer in like, plan for this to be able to happen right away. Whatever you actually need or want as a salary, not like, oh, I think I can get by on $2,000 a month. Like, have you ever before? Because if you haven't, like, it's still going to happen now.
Yes.
You know, like pay yourself what you really need, pay yourself a healthy salary. And if you're stealing money from your own business, you're not paying yourself enough in salary. Now, that's different from looking at the business at the end of the year saying like, okay, now I can, you know, decide to reinvest the profits or take it out or whatever. I'm not saying you can't also keep beyond that. But if you're dipping in every single month, you're not paying yourself enough. So that was a huge shift for me once I finally paid myself more. Because also you have to get realistic about how much the business needs to make. It's very easy to be like, I only need $2,000 a month. And that's kind of what you aim for in the business. And then like, you're always falling behind. So when, you know, I started Meet Edgar, I started paying myself, like I pay myself around $200,000 a year, which is like plenty and more than I need. And I started paying myself that right from the beginning. And so for me, that's enough to, you know, max out my retirement, pay all my expenses, have some savings. I didn't rely, like the business also has profit, but I don't rely on that profit for my personal income.
I'm blown away. You started paying yourself that much right in the beginning of the business. You must have started with huge cash flow. Is that just from the 500 customers that came on in the first 60 days?
Okay. So I should clarify, like that's Edgar combined with the training business.
Oh, when there was still LKR revenue.
Right, right. Because we didn't just like shut, like the team transitioned. It wasn't like we shut one down and started the other. So yeah, I did already have obviously a healthy...
Same bank account.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, got it.
Like that was already like, there was seven figures like before Edgar launched.
And as an entrepreneur, is it your, or an employer, is it your goal to have a company 401k plan? Do you already do that?
Yep, we already do that. We have 401k matching, health insurance, all that good stuff. As far as a CPA, I do have a CPA filing the taxes. To me, that's like such a no-brainer, especially with tax. My philosophy around taxes is always like, do not mess around with taxes. Make sure you're paying your taxes. Make sure you do. That's like the one thing you cannot mess up in your business because you can't just forget about that. So I've always been like, you have to go pro with that.
Oh my gosh. I know. I know. I have people come to me and sometimes people will get themselves into IRS debt and they'll say to me, Hillary, the IRS only charges 3.5%. Like this credit card's at 16. I'm going to pay off the credit card first. And I'm like, stop, drop and roll.
Right.
You cannot be in debt to the federal government. Like they will go into your bank account and take your money without asking. I promise you, like, this is the first thing to clear up despite that interest rate delta. So yeah, that's not super topical to the interview, but I couldn't agree more. So, right. And I know you have a bookkeeper and a CPA, and I think you just have to outsource those skill sets. As an entrepreneur, you want to surround yourself with kind of experts. You never want to be the smartest person in the room, right? So speaking of outsourcing, would you tell us a little bit about what Meet Edgar can do for business owners? And I'm a recent convert, by the way, we're up and running. Yeah, loving the tool. So would you tell us about it?
Yeah, I mean, in the context of outsourcing, what Meet Edgar does often replaces either what a VA is doing or what the owner is doing themselves to manage their social media. Actually, we get a lot of guilty emails where people are like, I've hired my social media VA after I brought on Edgar and I feel sort of bad. It's awesome.
That social media VA can go on to do something more valuable.
There you go. So yeah. So what Edgar does that's really different than other social media tools is we like to call Edgar he instead of it. He stores a library of all of your social updates in categories and then he cycles through them and repurposes them. So with other tools, there's so much grunt work to be done because you're always having to go back and refill. You have to refill your queue over and over again, or you have to go manually schedule all your messages. With Edgar, you build a library. You're going to build a bunch of it in the beginning, and then you're going to curate it and add to it over time. You know, it's social media. It's not a static thing, but most of your status updates can and should be repurposed because less than 5% of your audience in any channel actually sees anything you post. So if you're coming up with new content every time, it's just a big waste of time. To be honest, you should be reusing that same content. So Edgar does that for you. You don't have to go in and like tell him when to send everything. He pulls your content from your library onto your social accounts for you without you having to do anything.
And one of the things that's been a huge upgrade for me is I do a lot of one-on-one work in a private Facebook group, and Meet Edgar will even post in there. I do not do a lot of automated mm-hmm. posting in there, but there's no other tool that I know of that does that. And also it keeps your images with your posts, which is pretty unique.
Yeah, we've had a lot of people that really love us for groups, because with groups, I think you often do want to repeat the same thing weekly. A lot of people with groups will have a like, it's motivational Monday, yes. You know, give me your quote, or like Friday check-in, you know.
I have Friday Financial Freedom Friday.
There you go. Yeah. So yeah, with Edgar, you just totally automate it. So Edgar's handling the posting and then you go in and do the interaction. And that's something that we're big believers in. You know, let software do what software can do. Your audience doesn't know or care whether, you know, it's Financial Freedom Friday, whether you are on your phone, whether you are on your computer, whether a software tool is doing it. Like, the way the message got put there does not matter. And then it frees up your time to actually go in, engage with people, build relationships. That's what software can't do. So free up your time to do that on social.
Right. And another thing we found to be really great was the ability to kind of categorize. So I do mm-hmm. inspirational posts, I do financial posts, I promote my own stuff, and to manage the mix of that mm-hmm. stuff that goes in, because I don't always want to be shouting at people with a megaphone. I also don't want people to think I'm trying to mimic Tony Robbins. So that's been helpful in terms of managing the voice.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big problem I wanted to solve with Meet Edgar. Is with other tools, if you're kind of smart and you batch your updates, so you're like, okay, I'm going to, you know, figure out a bunch of inspirational quotes. But then once you put it in the tool, they're all there together. Or I'm going to write a bunch of promotions telling people to buy my book. You don't want, exactly. you know, one day they're all together. So yeah, Edgar really is the only tool that allows you to fine tune and manage that ratio of your different updates.
Great. And where should people go to check it out?
Just meetedgar.com, Meet Edgar on Twitter and Facebook.
Awesome, Laura. It's been fantastic having you here. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
All right. Profit Boss, thanks for making it to the end of another episode of PBR. I have been doing a lot of thinking about you. I'm thinking about how hard it can be to change old habits. I mean, sometimes I think how nice it would be if things worked like they did for Keanu Reeves in those Matrix movies. If we could just lie back in an industrial punk rock barber chair and have a little cable plugged into the backs of our necks and just instantly become the masters of our financial domains. That would be kind of perfect, right? Except for the part about having the cable plugged into the back of your neck and the whole industrial punk thing. And Keanu Reeves is so annoying when you get right down to it. But I think it's important to form new habits, especially ones as fun as being alerted when new episodes of Profit Boss Radio go live. You want to know a secret? This is one habit that's almost no work at all. All you have to do is head over to iTunes, find the Profit Boss Radio channel, and hit subscribe. That's it. Then each week, you'll automatically find the latest episode ready and waiting on your favorite device. And the best part is that subscribing to Profit Boss Radio is just the beginning of other wonderful habits, like taking control of your money and learning how to build wealth or starring in your own reality show. Well, maybe not that one, unless it's on YouTube and self-produced. But plenty of great stuff is sure to happen when you subscribe. So what are you waiting for?
Thank you for listening to Profit Boss Radio, where creating success on our own terms happens every day. You're not alone in your journey to a rich life, and that's why Hillary is here to add value in each and every episode. See you next time on the podcast for women and money.